Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Gosh, it's like a warm hug, isn't it? That theme tune. Tributes are being paid, of course, to the actress Angela Lansbury, who has died at the age of 96. And her career spanned more than eight decades. She was a three-time Oscar nominee, a five-time Tony Award winner. She will be best remembered, though, won't she, for her role as Jessica Fletcher in the TV series Murder, She Wrote.
Just before we entered Grace's room, you said you didn't wear pink.
And you never mentioned that the shoes were pink, did you?
No, I didn't. If it makes you feel any better, I knew you were guilty before that.
Jessica, gotcha. I'm joined in studio this morning by pop culture journalist Jen Gannon. And Jen, we're going to talk about on-screen female villains. That's why you're here. And we'll get to that in a moment. But we just want to talk about Angela briefly, Angela Lansbury and her career, because most of us do know her as Jessica Fletcher. But there's a whole other story
there. Yeah, I mean, she had such a scope and a span. She was a true performer from her head to her toe. I mean, as you said, Oscar nominated, you know, twice at the start of her career, first at age of 19 and then winning a Tony at 83. I mean, that is just impossible to think about right now, to have that long a career. And she has made this indelible impression on several generations. To me, she could be, you know, Jessica Fletcher for a lot of people. She is from Murder, She Wrote. To others, she's Mrs. Potts from Beauty and the Beast. Then to others, she's Miss Price in Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So she's right there in our childhood from then on. And, you know, we're talking about female villains today, but she played the essence of evil in The Manchurian Candidate, which is one of her finest roles. I think she plays the brainwashed Raymond Shaw's mother. And she was this controlling wife of the witch-hunting anti-communist senator with, you know, their eyes on the White House. And that should have been, I think, her Oscar-winning role, which it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And she said she was actually really upset by that, that she missed out on it.
And there's the Irish connection as well. Her mother was from Belfast and she herself had a home in Ballycotton.
She took her children to Cork. She had a huge career in the 60s on Broadway. But she said she kind of got lost to the limelight, because if you're front and centre in a Broadway show, you are the star and a lot of attention is on you. And she did say she took her eye off the ball when it came to her children, who were getting involved in drugs. And one of them, her daughter, was getting under the influence of Charles Manson. So she decided to up sticks, leave, went to Cork, and they really just blossomed there. And she said that's where her family kind of reunited and came back together. Mm-hmm. And then even on the stage, like in the 60s, Stephen Sondheim absolutely adored her and put her in Sweeney Todd, as we know. And I think, you know, that role in Sweeney Todd as Mrs. Lovett is one of her defining roles as well. I think another villain that she played so well. But then he also, you know, in 2009, she was in A Little Night Music for him as well. And they had this great relationship, I think. And then, I mean, I think audiences found her again as Madame Mercati in Noel Carroll's Blythe Spirit. She toured that, like, I mean, she was on stage, as I said, 83, winning the Tony for it, but then also toured it, went to the West End. And I know a lot of people got the opportunity to see her on stage. And I think she really blossomed on stage. She was a great actress. And as she said herself, never the starring role, but appreciated being a character actress.
Yeah, and someone who has a long career like that, you know, you always can tell that she's probably a nice person to work with. You
oh,
know,
yeah,
people
definitely
liked having her around.
Yeah, and something I think that's really I loved so much for all of us Jessica Fletcher fans out there, she did say that she always rejected Jessica having a love interest, because she said she wanted her to remain independent and in control. And I loved that about her, and I loved that she was never ashamed of doing TV, and TV those days was seen as something less than, but she enjoyed it so much, and it had such a reach, and it got into normal people's homes everywhere. And we all saw her as this kind of kindly aunt then, and that was the impression she made on us.
I saw someone tweeting this morning that it was close to 50 years ago that she played Elvis's mammy on screen, which is just extraordinary. I mean, the length of her career in itself is something to be remarked upon. So that's Angela Lansbury, who has died at the age of 96. But we want to move on to our female villains, and Louise Fletcher won an Oscar for her unforgettable and scary role as Nurse Ratched. This was from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And Louise also died recently. She was aged 88. She was a fearsome symbol of institutional authority. The character of Nurse Ratched is one of film's greatest female villains. Let's take a listen.
Please do, Bay. Explain everything.
Everything?
Aren't you ashamed?
No, I'm not.
You know, Billy, what worries me is how your mother's going to take this.
Well, you don't have to tell her, Miss Ratchet.
I don't have to tell her. Your mother and I are old friends, you know that.
No, don't tell my
mother. Don't you think you should have thought of that before you took that woman in that room?
It's a short clip, but it's quite chilling.
Very, very. And I think, you know, I mean, she is one of those monsters of cinema, definitely. And I think a lot of people, when they talk about, you know, frightening, terrifying performance. And I think this is definitely undermining like that simplistic idea of the woman as a caregiver. And she's just so coolly vindictive. She's so antagonistic. And there's this complete absence of empathy that we always expect from somebody in that kind of line of work. And as you said, you know, she was institutionalized in it. Like, you can see that, you know, this is the way she thought she should behave, and keeping the patients in line and having them inform on each other and pointing out their mental weaknesses and using, you know, very sensitive information, you know, to make their lives hell. And I think a lot of the times when I'm looking back, when I was, you know, researching this, doing this, I was thinking, you can't have a lot of revisionist history about the way that these women were seen, because the characters are seen, because there's a streak of misogyny always in a lot of film writing when men are looking at women. And you, as female characters, they're not allowed a lot of scope. A lot of the time they're just reductive, like you're reduced to the, you know, the dutiful wife, or, you know, the girlfriend, the blank girlfriend. And the villain was the only way that a woman could have a lot of duplicity and a lot of, you know, in-depth kind of intensity to them, to their characters. But I think with Nurse Ratched, they did try to do a bit of revisionist history on her. Ryan Murphy did a show for Netflix about, you know, her life before One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I don't think it worked at all. They tried to rehabilitate the character into just being this domineering professional who was up against these men who were bullying, you know, these bullies. She didn't want to be bullied by these men, or, you know, subjected to any kind of loss of control by them. But I think that didn't really work for me. I think, you know, the character just encapsulates the misuse of power.
Also interesting, Ed, to take a look at what happened to her career after she played that role, because you can ask the question about, you know, how decision makers viewed somebody who had played a character like Nurse Ratched.
Exactly. Like, male, you know, actors can move from a serial killer to, you know, the star of a rom-com within a blink of an eye. But women very much get targeted and, you know, with that kind of role, like they're just seen as that one person. And her performance is so controlled, and it's so unnerving and very naturalistic in the face of Jack Nicholson's emotive fireworks. And it was such a celebrated role. She won the Oscar for it, but she should have had a more illustrious career. And I think, you know, she never stopped working, but the roles didn't match her greatness as an actress. And I think that they could never move on from that performance, because it struck a chord so deeply in so many people.
Okay, on now to her performance. And I think this is one of the reasons why I don't watch scary films, because I saw Kathy Bates in Misery as Annie Wilkes.
Do you know what they did to the native workers who stole diamonds? Don't worry, they didn't kill them. That would be like junking your Mercedes just because it had a broken spring. No, if they caught them, they had to make sure they could go on working. But they also had to make sure they could never run away. The operation was called hobbling.
Whatever you're thinking about doing, please don't do it. Any for God's
sake. Shh, darling. Trust me.
God's sake.
It's for the best.
Annie, please!
Oh gosh, that's the scene with the ankles. I can't believe we played that. That was the bit that gave me nightmares. But again, Kathy Bates.
Yeah, and she won an Oscar for this, and so deserved. I just think it's such a great story about fame and idolizing people that you don't know, and how, you know, art and culture can save people's lives, but it also has this adverse effect. And, you know, believing that as a fan, you own the art, or you own that person by virtue of being a fan. And I think we can definitely still see that in internet, you know, social media stans, as they call themselves today, and that age of the parasocial relationship. So it's still a story that is current, very much so. And I just think, you know, she just, yet again, she's subverting that notion of like an older woman as a kindly, maternal person. And she's, you know, a woman that nobody cares about. She lives in this isolated farmhouse. She's not, you know, fetishized. She's not, you know, voluptuous and sexual. She's dowdy. And I think, you know, society views her as redundant and unattractive and forgettable. And it's something that Judi Dench also kind of tapped into in her performance And in Notes on a Scandal as the teacher, yes. Barbara, who was very isolated as well, and they want to take revenge on the society almost that's shutting them out. And she's very at odds with the world. And I just love that internalized rage. And it really shows, like, you know, she could, women can be as aggressive as men when they want to be. And I just love the two of them playing against each other with, you know, James Caan's Paul Sheldon, who is helpless in her farmhouse, and her asking him to complete these novels that she's addicted to. And you know, the finale, not giving anything away, but it is just incredible. It's genius.
I can't believe I've been reminded of that scene. That's going to be in my head for the whole day and the whole night. Let's move on to Glenn Close's outstanding performance as Alex Forrest in Fatal Attraction.
Do you know, Alex, when you meet somebody for the first time and you get this instant attraction, you're trying to move him into the country and you're keeping him away from me. And you're playing happy family. But you wouldn't understand that because you're so selfish. Because he told me about you. He was very honest.
So you say there's a lot of messy sexism around Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, there's so much written about Glenn Close's character, Alex. It's an iconic erotic thriller. And I would recommend, you know, that people seek out Karina Longworth, who is a film historian. She does a podcast called You Must Remember This. She did a whole episode around Fatal Attraction and our perception of it. And, you know, it's a really excellent deep dive into our feelings that surround it. I mean, it is the gold standard in sexism, in reductive sentiments about women. You know, it coined the phrase the bunny boiler. And it's, you know, Glenn Close has even said that the character was treated badly, that Alex was treated badly. And I think what happened was Adrian Lyne showed the film, did a screening of it and couldn't believe the audience's reaction, because the initial ending had Alex stab herself and she had Michael Douglas's character, Dan, his DNA on the knife. The audiences went wild. They said, no, we wanted to suffer. We wanted to feel revenge. And, you know, saying a lot of intense, you know, I can't say industrial language about her. And it seems like Michael Douglas, who was the poster boy for this, you know, can't help myself over-sexed man, gets away with it, and it's his behaviour is completely glossed over. And the conclusion, where you see his saintly, almost virginal wife, you know, shooting Alex and keeping the sacred image of the all-American family together.
Yeah, I suppose though, in this case, it kind of blows our theory that women get pigeonholed after playing a villain.
True.
Because Glenn Close, look at her career afterwards, before and afterwards.
Yeah, sensational career. But I do think with somebody like poor Sharon Stone, who played, you know, the unforgettable Catherine Tramell in Basic Instinct, another Michael Douglas theory is again, she really got pigeonholed completely after that. And it just depends. I think Glenn Close is somebody that had the career and, you know, really tried to push herself out of that and could be seen in anything. But I think with Sharon Stone, it did have an adverse effect on her.
Well, let's go to something completely different now. Ursula time.
But you'll have your man. Life's full of tough choices, isn't it? Oh, and there is one more thing. We haven't discussed the subject of payment. You can't get something for nothing, you know.
But I don't have...
I'm not asking much. Just a token, really, a trifle. You'll never even miss it. What I want from you is your voice.
That's Ursula from The Little Mermaid, voiced by Pat Carroll, 1989, and easily one of the most charismatic characters in that film, would you
say? Definitely. I mean, she really is one of my all-time favourite villains. And I think there has been this resurgence of people just being Ursula fans. I know Lizzo is a massive fan of Ursula and wanted to play her in the new Little Mermaid live-action film, but she missed out to Melissa McCarthy. But, you know, she's based on John Waters, you know, drag muse divine. I love that, like, that's the way she's drawn. And I love that Pat Carroll gives her that kind of mischievous, smoky edge. She's like cackling all the time. She oozes confidence, and, you know, she really just plots against the traditional establishment in the film. She's not like Ariel. She doesn't want to be part of your world or their world. She wants to rule the world. And I think, you know, that's obviously kind of a better, you know, message to put out there, I think. And I just love it. I think the banger ratio in The Little Mermaid is very high. You've got Part of Your World, Kiss the Girl, Under the Sea. But I do think her show-stealing performance, Poor Unfortunate Souls, I think that's the one that really stuck, you know, in my mind forever. It's a joy, an absolute joy.
Jen, thank you so much. Jen Gannon there on the on-screen female villains that we've come to admire over the years. Now, coming up next, we're going to ask from the professional, Professor Andrew Coogan, why it's harder to get up early when the morning is dark. That's next.